It's the most important day on the WCHL broadcast calendar. It's the 2013 Chapel Hill Carborough Orange County Forum on 97.9 FM. WCHL, Chapel Hill Carborough's news, talk, and Tar Heel station. And streaming live on chapelboro.com. 10 hours live from the WCHL studios with more than 60 members of our community coming together to discuss and debate local thought-provoking issues. The annual forum is brought to you by University Mall, Molly Maid, The Happy Tooth, UPS Stores, Fordham Boulevard, and Metamont, AutoLogic, Carolina Inn, Harrington Bank, and Durham Tech. Now, hour three of our forum, the topic, Big Time Sports. Here's your host, Rand Northam.
Welcome to hour three of the 2013 WCHL Community Forum. The forum offers 10 topics in 10 hours featuring commentary and discussion among town and university officials and other representatives from our community, all focused on the important issues affecting our county. In this hour, we'll discuss big-time sports, a look into the role of big-time college athletics, how it plays into our community. Big-time college sports is the headline that has been adopted and is at the forefront of heated conversations on campuses nationwide. It's easy to feel like we're alone on our own little island, especially when big issues surface, but it's not just UNC having this same discussion. Chancellor Thorpe recently said, "We got ahead of ourselves saying the NCAA hasn't been on campus to investigate in something like 50 years. When it stepped on campus just a few years ago, people were appalled, really, and think some still are. It seems some feel like this isn't something that's happening nationwide and that UNC broke the rule of all rules. That is, of course, the extreme. Others are saying that it's happening everywhere and UNC just got caught." So that seems to be at the heart of the general topic, and the heart of the issue is certainly money. Big-time college athletics is talking about the revenue-generating sports, how they help colleges and universities, how they hurt colleges and universities. We'll also talk today about how big-time college sports affects the local community. We've got people on both sides of the issue today, and with me today on this forum, Jay Smith is a UNC professor and associate chair of the history department. He got his bachelor's and master's from Northern Illinois, a mid-major school, and his PhD at Michigan. Sally Shuping Russell is a member of the UNC Board of Trustees, elected in 2007, and the managing director of BlackRock. Her term continues until 2015. She got her bachelor's in English from Carolina and a master's from Columbia. Laurie Policelli is the executive director of the Orange County Visitors Bureau. She attended the University of Wisconsin-Superior in Milwaukee and majored in communications. Brian Chakos is a former UNC football offensive lineman. He graduated in 2006 with a bachelor's in sociology. He's currently on the staff of WCHL's website, chapelboro.com, in the sales department. And Riley Parker is approaching the completion of her freshman year of eligibility on the reigning national champion UNC women's soccer team. She's from Danville, California, and is undeclared so far. So we've got people on both sides of the issues today. But first, I want to look at the topic on the broad scale. And full disclosure, I am a sports fan myself. But why are sports such an attraction to people in the United States? It's an obvious topic that sports are an attraction to people in the United States. And Brian, a former football player, and I know that you are a fan of athletics, why are athletics so important to people, and why are they such an attraction to people in the United States?
Sure, Rand. Well, thanks. It's great to be here with everyone and the panelists. And I have a couple different views on this. Obviously, being a college athlete and playing, as well as working in two different professional sports leagues. I worked for 4 years in the National Football League, 1 year in the NHL as well. So big-time professional sports and college athletics do multiple things. Obviously, it's a unbelievable environment to be in. It allows families, individuals, to take 4 to 6 hours out of their day to be basically captivated in a different world. It bonds people together. It brings families and friends together, camaraderie. A perfect example is the travesty and tragedy would just happen in Boston. You see what happens at Red Sox games, where it's able to bring a community together. It unites people. It unites a country together. And so those are just a few examples of what sports do and what big-time college sports can bring for communities.
So I've got a couple sources here just to back up the fact that college sports, it's not really a question, not college sports, but sports in general, are a hot topic in the United States. One source says that as of 2011, National Football League's total revenue was $11 billion. The Major League Baseball was $7 million. The National Basketball Association was $4.3 billion, and it trickles down from there. We've got other stats that say the NFL is about $8 billion. The MLB is at about $6 billion, and the NBA is about $3 billion. And then still other stats that show generally the same numbers. The Major League Baseball, $7.7 billion. The NFL, $9.5 billion. So the numbers are there. There's lots of money going into these programs. And there's lots of money to be made in these programs. So, you know, professional athletics is a job. The quarterback for the Carolina Panthers, Cam Newton, works in front of tens of thousands of people weekly. Works in front of tens of thousands of people. College athletes also perform in front of tens of thousands of people. So is that a job? Is it a job on the college level? Is it an internship on the college level? That's part of this discussion as well. So I certainly open up the floor now to all of you to add to what Brian has said as far as the attraction of sports in the United States, but also to talk now about the fact that is this a job that we're talking about at college, or is this just like an internship and you're preparing yourself for the career? Any thoughts?
Well,
Sally Shooping Russell?
I think that it's important that we not confuse our group, everybody, as you know, with the same paintbrush, because there are over 800 athletes at Carolina, and I think about 100 of those are in revenue-producing sports, if I'm not mistaken. And I think that to assume that you know, that all athletes are out there, you know, the question, are they doing a job or not? I think it's really, the question is really, what is the appropriate role for athletics at a university, because I do happen to think that the role of student is an important piece of the, you know, I know the cold definition of student athlete is one that many of us would like to talk about, but I personally think that the notion of the student needs to be a big piece of that. It is the reason it goes first before athlete. And I would also say, however, that I think that the fact that we're discussing this is very good. And it's very positive, because things change over time. You do have very large numbers there that, you know, that there is a lot of money that comes in. I will say that, you know, the budget of the university is $2 billion. So these are still, on a grand scheme, this is not a lot of our funding. So I think that it's really critical that we realize that the bulk of the activity and the funding is in the academic mission, and that things get sidetracked, but we can't let that, you know, steer the bus, so to speak.
Jay, are we getting away from the academics of, or the student side of the student athlete? Do you see that?
Well, that is one of my concerns. Although I want to second Sally's point about being careful to not to paint with too broad a brush. All of the 800 athletes at UNC have very different sorts of experiences, and even on the revenue-producing teams, the football and basketball, men's basketball in particular, you'll find a wide range of academic experiences. I want to acknowledge that right up front. But yes, I am concerned that for a significant percentage of our revenue sport athletes, I'm not sure this is really new, but I'm concerned that for a large percentage of those athletes, athletics has displaced academics as their priority, as their primary focus, as the core of their identity. And if that is the case, I think UNC and other universities have to ask whether that is the kind of bargain we're willing to make. Maybe we are, but if we are, I'd like us to be more honest and transparent about the kind of bargain we're making. That is, if we're willing to bring quite a few athletes, 100 or 150 athletes to UNC in any given year to be athletes first, let's be honest about what we're doing and say why we're doing that.
Riley Parker, you are you're finishing up your freshman year, soccer player on the national champion soccer team, but an Olympic sport, a non-revenue generating sport, even though it's one of the most most successful programs in really the history of the NCAA. You know, going through this freshman year of yours, how is it to balance athletics and academics? There's a lot to that, right?
Yeah, you know, I think it is student athlete specifically unique, actually, amongst each person, because I think each of us handle it in our own way, and all of our priorities are different depending on what sport we play and what our goals are overall long term. So balancing it amongst all the hours we put into our sport is a challenge for everyone, but I think it really comes down to the individual and how they prioritize their time. And I don't think you can really put, not necessarily like a stereotype on it, but say that we're getting away from the academic aspect. I can see how people do view it that way, but I think it really just comes down to the individual and the team and what their coach and their staff puts first. And I know individually in soccer, for us, it's number one academics, number two soccer. Anson really believes that if we can succeed academically, then we're going to succeed. We're going to go farther in life. Rather than if you were to just put all of your time into soccer. Obviously, he loves how much dedication and how much time we put into the sport, but overall, he influences character and life after sports. So,
I want to bring Laurie Policelli in now and talk on the community side of things, talking about the fact that, you know, this is not an area, this is not a city or a town that there is a professional team. There is the University of North Carolina. And then if you want to trickle down even further, there's high school, which, you know, we can talk about that later, too, that high school is mm-hmm. inching into this conversation as well now. But, you know, what does, in a broad sense of the term, what do big time sports do for the community?
Thanks, Rand. Clearly, sports tourism is a critical part of Chapel Hill and Orange County's economic base. And when we look at tourism, we're looking at a $27 billion sports tourist industry in the United States. So obviously, when we look at our 1,500 hotel rooms here, our restaurant, our investment by new businesses, visitors who travel here for sporting events are a critical part of our success. We know from our data that a typical football weekend will generate $2 million in this area. And when I say $2 million, that's really about new business. You oftentimes see numbers attributed to games such as a $7 million weekend, but that really considers the students, the locals here, the people who would be coming here anyway but choose to come here for a weekend. So when we look at new business, new monies into the community, we see football as a $2 million weekend. Basketball is harder to measure, but what's really interesting right now is the increased demand in baseball. And baseball has really taken off weekday and weekend, conference, non-conference, and that's largely because professional baseball tickets are getting really expensive. Television coverage has broadened. And we're a great team. So when you look at the number of people coming in right now for baseball during a shoulder time, the industry is really taking off. So clearly sports tourism is important to our economic base.
So I want to go back to a point that Jay made, and Brian, send it over to you for a second to talk about the student-athlete side of things. And yeah, you've been through the system. You got a degree from Carolina, and you had to balance, just as Riley is balancing now, the schoolwork load with the practice load, with mm-hmm. the travel load, with the you know, the home game schedule load and all of that, plus getting sleep and studying as well. So, sure. You know, where are universities right now in that conversation, and what's going on?
They're in a really hard spot. And I think Jay makes a great point. Where are all universities with regards to are they athletes first? Are they students first? And I know Jay had a quote in the Herald Sun of striking away student athlete. You know, I've always thought of us as more being employees of the university. With bringing in so much revenue for the university, we should almost be employees of the university. But then again, you lose the tax exemption of being, you know, nonprofit, and there's different things along those lines, so that doesn't work. But again, the reality of it, and I know other sports might be different, is as someone who is from out of state, had, you know, had decent grades, decent SAT, would have had no chance to get into North Carolina from out of state just because of how difficult of a school it is to get into. Without me being able to play football at a high level in high school, I would have no chance to get into this school. So, you know, that's just being an opportunity that I was able to utilize. So again, you know, this is just going to be the give and take, I think, that Jay and I will see with being able to use those kind of opportunities that students have. And if it's the athletic tool, you know, that maybe Riley and I were able to, you know, be able to hone in on to be able to, you know, leapfrog and be able to get into this great school, or whether it's someone else who uses academics, those are just things that we're got to be able to utilize for ourselves.
Sally, yeah?
Let me ask you this. If you'd had the opportunity to go straight from high school into professional ball, would you have wanted to do that?
You know, I think every student, and that's a great question. It's, you know, I think, you know, for me, it's different. I wanted to get an education. You know, it's something I always told my parents. I wanted to get a college degree. And I think that's something a lot of kids do. But I also grew up in a different economic situation. I came from a middle-class family, so there was something different. A lot of my teammates, I'd probably say 85% of my teammates, came from single-parent homes, really bad living conditions, and they weren't afforded that opportunity, where if they had the chance and they were big enough, strong enough, fast enough, and they could have gone to the NFL right away, they would have. But again, I was in a different situation where I could have afforded to go to college to be able to in that situation.
Would you, Brian, have left? Would you have left in your junior year, your sophomore year? You know, if somebody came to you and said, "I want you on the let's even say the Falcons."
Sure.
Today.
Yeah, and I think, you know, again, it's all, you know, woulda, shoulda, coulda, but it, you know, that could have been an opportunity, yeah. But at the same time, I love this university. It's a great place to get an education, and it's a great place to play athletics too. But I also think, and another issue I hope we touch on is, and it's something I think academics, athletics have to come together. And it's, this university is more than just academics and athletics. There's a social component to it that I think we're leaving out as well. And I think as a community, we become too divisive with pointing athletics as saying, well, academics is trying to cut us off, and academics is saying, well, we got to cut athletics off because it's getting too big. And I think we need to pull together more than pointing fingers. And I get it. I think it's getting too much of that is how I really feel.
Sally, did you have a follow-up to that?
I was just going to say, again, to me, this is a fabulous opportunity that we have right here to really put a lot of these issues on the table. They're timely. We have examples across the country that people can point to. And you know, I'm not sure what the answer is, but I know that these are important questions that need to be asked. I think one question that's worth asking is, should we do like baseball, where you can go straight from high school into the professionals? I don't know the answer, but I think it's a question that's interesting to ask, especially as the issue comes up as to, well, you know, are you an employee, for example? Are the athletes really employees? And because that does imply the only reason that they're there is to play sports, which is what you just said is not the reason that you know, came to school. But I also think that athletics is a very important role for a university. I think that, you know, they're the reasons that we all know that it connects generations, it connects, you know, socioeconomic and economic and, you know, different majors, and a lot of times it's the first touch point that anyone has to come, you know, to the institution. But one thing I think we haven't mentioned is that throughout history, the notion of a liberal education included, you know, academics, arts, and physical vigor. And to me, physical vigor is athletics. And so I think athletics plays a role within a university or a higher education setting. The right question is, you know, what is that role, and is it out of balance? And if so, how do we get it back in balance? So rather than throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Well, I know this conversation is just getting started, and we thank you for joining us for the Community Forum. We're going to take a break right now and come back with more of the 2013 WCHL Chapel Hill Carborough Community Forum. We're talking big-time sports, its effect on not only UNC, but universities and colleges nationwide, as well as the community, the goods, the bads, and possibly the uglies, too. So we'll take a break and come right back. I'm Rand Northam. Don't go away.
The Orange County campus of Durham Tech is booming with 70% more course offerings. This is Penny Gluck, Executive Dean of Durham Tech's Orange County campus, here to invite you to find out why your neighbors and their kids are being educated by us in careers for the 21st century. We specialize in healthcare careers, including emergency medical management, computers, the arts, and much more. To see the full catalog, go to durhamtech.edu. I look forward to seeing you on campus here in Orange County.
Hi, this is Don Rice, owner of Molly Maid of Chapel Hill, with five simple reasons our customers do business with us. Number one, we clean your home the way you want it cleaned. Second, you're not bound by a contract. Third, we are true professionals. Fourth, we work as hard as you do. And number five, people notice. They really notice. Find out for yourself why hundreds of area families trust Molly Maid. Visit MollyMaid.com to book a free in-home customized cleaning estimate. MollyMaid.com.
When you think of Harrington Bank, do you think green? No, not that kind of green, sustainability green. At Harrington Bank, we're the first bank in the nation to earn Green Plus certification. And the Chapel Hill Carborough Chamber of Commerce has just selected us Sustainable Business of the Year. For Harrington Bank, going green is a smart business decision that strengthens our local economy, environment, and community. Stop by one of our three convenient locations in Chapel Hill. Harrington Bank, you deserve banking like this.
You wouldn't start a home repair project without the right tools. And if you're starting your own business, the right tools are essential to success. At the UPS store, we have a small business startup toolkit that includes a private mailbox, packing services, flyers, brochures, business cards, and more. What's in your small business toolkit? Ask about our small business startup toolkit today at the UPS stores. We love small business and we love logistics.
The UPS stores at Chapel Hill North on Fordham Boulevard next to the Chapel Hill University Inn and in Meadowmont.
It's the 2013 WCHL Chapel Hill Carborough Orange County Forum. You can also hear all our local conversations streaming live on chapelboro.com. And now back with more of the WCHL Forum.
Welcome back to hour three of the 2013 WCHL Chapel Hill Carborough Community Forum. We're here with several important dignitaries from our community, and we are discussing big-time college sports and the roles they play in our community. We're speaking with Riley Parker of the UNC Women's Soccer Team, Jay Smith of the History Department, Laurie Policelli of the Orange County Visitors Bureau, Sally Shuping-Russell of the UNC Board of Trustees, and Brian Chakos is a former UNC football player. And Jay, I sense that you had a thought to the comments that we left off before we took that break there, that you were kind of on the edge of your seat for where that conversation was going. I hate that we had to take a break.
I forget now why I was drawn to the edge of my
seat. Okay, well,
I do have some statistics I'd like to share.
Please
actually,
do.
If I
yes,
may.
Definitely.
I'll be quick about this. But, I want to acknowledge Brian's point and Riley's earlier point that, you know, it's a great thing for all of these athletes to have the opportunity to come to UNC and to get a great education. And I have great admiration for all of them who manage to balance their athletic and academic demands and perform in the classroom. I also have great admiration for those who struggle for different reasons. But what I wanted to point out was that there is... You know, as I said, there's a systemic aspect of the revenue sport experience that we need to address openly, be very honest about. And that is that the revenue sports depend on, are made possible by, the recruitment of a fair number of academically marginal players. And let me throw out some statistics to underline this point. I got these statistics, incidentally, from the admissions director in a series of emails a couple of months ago. In 2008, I'm going to give you some statistics for 2008 through 2012. In 2008, there were 13 so-called committee case admits to the university among all of the athletes. 11 of the 13 were football players. That's 85%. In 2009, 16 total committee case admits, 11 of them football, 69%. In 2010, it was 64%. In 2011, 57%. In 2012, 48% football players as a percentage of the total committee case admits. The percentage was declining a little bit over the years there, but in part that's because the number of committee cases was actually increasing. The total number of football players was constant at about 10 or 12 per year. And we're not even hearing here about the basketball players. And that's because the admissions department doesn't want to divulge those numbers on the grounds that personal identities could be divulged if, say, you know, there were two recruits in a given year and both were committee cases. To say that out loud would be to identify them in a way that they would not like to be identified.
So it's a size versus, you know, a big, huge football team versus a, you know, 8, 10, 12-man basketball team.
Right. And so the point I want to make here is that there is quite clearly a direct correlation between the presence of the revenue sports and, of course, the success of the revenue sports and the admission of students who are going to be academically challenged, who are academically marginal, who don't meet the threshold that we normally expect to see in UNC students. And that creates a kind of, you know, a system in which those athletes need to be taken care of. They're being promised an education, of course, and that's the kind of compensation that they're receiving, ostensibly. They're getting a good education from UNC. But are they really? Are we confident that they're getting an education? Are we confident that we have systems in place to provide the kind of training that they need to get up to speed, to so that, you know, they can actually compete in the classroom in the way that they do on the field? I'm not persuaded that we have those systems in place. And so this, to me, this suggests that the system as currently constituted is, it's dysfunctional, it's even immoral to bring these people here and without being able to provide them the educations we've promised them. I think that's immoral.
Brian, I know we were talking yesterday actually about this topic and the fact that there, you know, what if there was a program created that was for the athletes, or, you know, a program that, you know, you don't have to go down a prescribed path. Do you have thoughts on that?
Sure. Well, and I think Jay makes some really good points. And Art Chansey, we were talking with him yesterday, Art brought up the program that Duke has. And Duke has a program where they bring kids in and they literally lay out the structure of how the kids learn. And if the kids are stronger in math, then they have a more math-focused major. If the kids are stronger in English formats, then it's more English-based and more English-focused. And maybe that's something that Carolina has to adopt. But I think, Jay, what we need to realize is, as a big-time athletic program and a big-time university, I think we can't be the first university and athletic department that raises our hands and says, we're going to take the lead and we're not going to take any partial qualifiers that are, you know, unbelievable athletes, and we're going to take a step back to show that we're going to do that with only these type of kids and only these type of kids that can qualify to get into Carolina with this kind of academic standard. Because if we do that, we're going to be at a huge disadvantage from the Clemsons and the NC State and the Florida States, just to use teams in our conference. And that's going to hurt us, and it's going to hurt us financially. And I think we're going to take a huge step back, and I think it's going to be a huge trickle-down effect. I think it's going to hurt us in, obviously, our performance on the field. I think it's going to hurt us revenue-wise with the opportunities to go to postseason opportunities. I think it's going to hurt all our non-revenue sports as well. I think it's going to hurt the amount of money we bring in revenue for the town, which is Lori's field. And again, you know, I think – academics are extremely important. There's no doubt about it. But I think we need to find some sort of middle ground where we institute programs to help these student athletes. So,
I don't think I disagree with anything that you just said necessarily, but I would I'm sorry, the first point you made, I wanted to respond to the very first point you made.
Can sure.
You,
I think the first, maybe it was the first point was where we talked about we
can't unilateral disarmament, right? We can't unilaterally disarm. That is, we can't by ourselves. We should not raise the admissions threshold to such a level that we can't bring in these talented athletes. That's a fair point, and I understand the point. But my response to that would be, well, then why can't UNC step to the forefront in the national discussion and begin urging like-minded institutions to rethink this whole thing that we're doing here? Now, why can't UNC do that? Okay, we can't unilaterally disarm. We can't change the way we do things tomorrow. But can't we, especially after what we've just been through in the last 3 years, we take the lead in driving the national discussion?
Sally, let's go to you as a member of the governing body of the university. How feasible is that conversation?
Well, quite frankly, I think what we did last week was exactly what you're talking about. I mean, I think bringing Hunter Rawlings and the whole crew in to start this is saying there are things here that need to be either adjusted or fixed, whatever where you fall on the spectrum. But clearly, there are things in higher education athletics that are appropriate to look at and question. The question of the NCAA's role, the whole thing, the ADs that's going on now, and the issue of the scholarship programs, et cetera. So I think we're trying to do exactly that, and I think you're right, and I would hope that we do. I also think, though, that it's important, and Jay, I just want to, because anytime anyone puts out statistics, I think, and I deal with statistics a lot in my business, you have to look at the opposite side of that, which is that, you can say 35%, 48% 1 year were fit football players, but that means that, 70% or 50% were not. And so, just to sort of paint, because a decent, percent were, say, football players of the committee admits, there are a lot of committee admits that aren't, that the opposite side of that number holds. And I think that it would not be fair to just leave those numbers hanging without, putting that in there. And I think one thing, and the other piece that's not in there, are the number of students who apply or who are, perhaps the coaches want to get that are not allowed admissions. And that certainly happens as well. But I think the bottom line here, and again, I think basically everyone is in the same place. We want this to be an excellent athletic program, but it can't be at the expense of excellent academics. I mean, University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill has got to maintain itself as one of the preeminent universities in the country and in the world, and absolutely to be able to keep a public university where the people of North Carolina and can come and get a quality education. I mean, that's really what it's all about. And the fact that different people have different talents, comes into play. But so I think that we're raising the questions, and it's time to start putting together some of the answers. The irony to me, and this is the last thing I'll say, is that in a funny way, we're saying academics is taking too much importance, yet that's all anyone's talking about at Carolina right now. No one is talking about the massive amount of research dollars. No one's talking about the fact that we had the highest piece of research done in Nature magazine, that we found out really how to prevent AIDS from spreading. I mean, these are massive, and nobody's talking about. So that's what I would like to be able to sort of shift this and put it within a proper context, which was one reason I wanted to put the financial piece out there, to put it again within a context. So we'll close there. So.
this is obviously we've hit the vein of the conversation here. We've hit the very important part of it, and I want to open it up to everyone. I want to allow Laurie, and we'll get to you, Riley, in a moment too, but Laurie, to allow you to respond to this, this part of the conversation now, and clearly it seems to be the heart of it.
It is. We probably service at the visitor center 27,000 visitors through our walk-in center and our live person, webmail, etc. The majority of people who come here, families of four looking at Carolina, are always steeped in the academics. It's interesting that it's rare for us to hear our visitors talk about sports. Now, our sports, of course, bring visitors in, repeat visitors in, and it has a great net sustainable benefit for our town. There's a lot of studies out there right now that shows that college sports have a greater impact than hallmark events like Olympics and some of the professional events, because the hallmark events result in substantial financial obligations for the host communities. The bid process alone is probably bigger than some of our budgets. And the infrastructure required to accommodate these visitors is unbelievably expensive. So when you look at college sports, we already have the necessary infrastructure in place. We're prepared to deal with the guests. And they're guests who typically make their money someplace else, come here, leave their money, and go home. So clearly it's an industry that employs 1,700 people and that we want to continue to grow and nurture a $26 million local payroll. But when we look at the actual brand outside the community of the University of North Carolina, we see academics.
Now, Riley, a freshman at UNC, a women's soccer player, this is your future that everyone is talking about. And, you know, major changes won't be made tomorrow. Major changes might not be made in the next 3 years while you're still here. But this is your future, and small changes could come. So is there any part of this conversation that scares you? Is there any part of this conversation that says this could really affect either my academic career or my athletic career while I'm at UNC?
You know, yeah, I think Brian had a good point on when he said how if we are gonna, I'm not quite sure how you worded it, but if you stop bringing in the athletes that aren't quite as academically eligible, I think it could have a really big impact on our programs, because across the country, people see the Carolina logo. It's the NC logo. It's very well known. And I think, in my personal opinion, and being from California, where we're nowhere near North Carolina, where I live, people associate that logo with sports. They'll think basketball, football, women's soccer, and baseball, men's lacrosse. We are ranked, if not number one, in the top 10 in all of those sports, and aside from football. But, I think if we obviously need to make a change, because there's clearly a problem that everyone's noticing with the academics and where it comes into play, where we should draw the line on sports and academics. But I think ultimately you can't get away from what Carolina stands for and what that logo symbolizes, because I know growing up as a child, you just see that logo and it just stands for so much more than academics to me, and to, I know, a lot of other athletes. It just, you look at that logo and that's just a childhood dream right there. So I think you really have to remember that not just in North Carolina, but all across the country, people view our university as an athletic powerhouse. So to take power away from the athletic system could change the way our university is viewed.
Laurie, I want to bring it back to you as well. What would happen if we made the decision to downgrade sports to, and I want to bring it to you in a second too, Brian, to possibly cut some of the number of sports that we offer, but to cut back the athletic program, what kind of effect does that have on the county, the community?
Well, the simple answer is it would hurt. You look at our football weekends and there's no room at the inn. You look at the average dollar left by a sport tourist, 25 cents of that is going to the hotel. The rest is going out into the community. So as we beam in pride at new restaurants, new retail, new infrastructure improvements to our town, our county, that is in no small part due to our sports tourists, and not just the revenue producing sports. The Olympic sports travel with the larger visitor parties. Mom, dad, grandparents come for that. Amateur athletics is just huge here in our area town and local governments, county government, are looking at parks and recreation upgrades to accommodate this growing industry. So it is an industry. It's a critical industry for us, and our economy would suffer.
Now, Brian, as well, before we take a break, talking about the fact that, you know, there are schools that have cut some of the, let's put it in this term, not to, you know, put any kind of meaning to it, but the smaller, the smaller non-revenue, to put it in even more specific, I guess, but to cut those programs and, what did you say, 28 programs here at UNC. But, you know, talk about that and what that would do for the university or to the university.
Well, that's just a sad reality that most major schools are going. I mean, most major schools have 28 sports and they're heading to 20. You know, obviously with Title IX, we can't just cut a certain kind of sport. It's going to have to be both men's and women's sports that are going to have to go. And, you know, it's unfortunate. I'm glad someone else is going to have to do it because, you know, as a former athlete, I would be absolutely devastated if it was my sport that was cut. You go to a certain school with the dreams of representing that university on the field, in the water, whatever the sport may be, and then for certain individuals that are in a boardroom to then decide that your sport is no longer valuable to the university is a very tough decision and a very tough spot to be in. So at the same time, though, when you're and it's very hard to say when it's not a revenue generating opportunity, it's a very hard thing. And unfortunately, this is what athletics has come to is producing revenue. So.
Well, I want to continue on this specific topic when we come back and talk about the effects on non-revenue generating sports players and what those, you know, specific players, as you mentioned, how that would affect them. So we will continue. You're listening to Hour 3 of the 2013 WCHL Chapel Hill Carver Orange County Community Forum. Our topic is big-time college sports and big-time sports in general. We're going to take another commercial break. This is Rand Northam, and we'll be right back.
The top 50 family-friendly businesses in the whole state of North Carolina have been identified, and AutoLogic of Carrboro is recognized for 3 years as a family-friendly 50 honoree. One of the smallest-sized businesses among a strong cast of large employers, owners Marianne and Andy Jones were thrilled with the recognition.
We are proud to receive this award for the third consecutive year. Our business philosophy guides us to form relationships between the employees that are AutoLogic and our customers that fully express professionalism, personal responsibility, and human values. For 27 years, these same principles have helped define and guide our commitment to the many families involved.
The Family Friendly 50 were researched and voted on by UNC's Kenan Flagler Business School and Carolina Parenting, Inc. The competition looks at businesses across the state of all sizes that helped employees balance work and family life. Congratulations to AutoLogic of Carrboro and this wonderful recognition as one of North Carolina's top 50 family-friendly businesses. AutoLogic of Carrboro, trust and logic for your car.
Did you know there's a state-of-the-art community college right here in Orange County? Hi, this is Penny Gluck, Executive Dean of Durham Tech's Orange County campus, and I invite you to find out why our enrollment is soaring and our class offerings are up 70% since last year. Our campus is green and sustainable with well-equipped classrooms, science labs, computer labs, and a spacious library, all designed to provide a first-class education. Find out more at durhamtech.edu and click on the Orange County campus.
At the Happy Tooth, dentistry is more than a profession. It's a passion. Here's Dr. Larry Moray.
My dad was the town dentist in the town that we grew up. And I always enjoyed spending time in his office and watching how he interacted with patients. The Happy Tooth concept is one where we want the patients to feel welcome and part of the family. I try to extend myself to all of my patients and make myself available to them for whatever their needs are, be it orthodontics, general dentistry, or beyond.
For more information, visit happytoothcares.com.
Local people, local issues. It's WCHL's Chapel Hill Carver Orange County Forum. 10 solid hours on 97.9 FM WCHL and streaming live on chapelbro.com. Now back to the forum.
And welcome back to the 2013 WCHL Chapel Hill Carver Orange County Community Forum. I'm here with Riley Parker, Jay Smith, Lori Policelli, Sally Shooping Russell, and Brian Chakos. And we're still in the heat of the conversation now. And right now we started talking about cutting sports, possibly cutting back to from possibly 28 to 20, anywhere in between, anything like that. But cutting non-revenue players, non-revenue generating sports players, that could have an effect, or would have an effect on them, certainly. You know, and you talk about putting them back to possibly, you know, club teams and things like that, to where they're still going to get to play. But it is. It's all about the money aspect. So, you know, first of all, Riley, I want to ask you, what are people, what are players on campus, what are non-revenue generating sports players and student athletes saying on campus right now as far as this conversation? What are people talking about and, you know, in the classroom and in the locker rooms of, you know, of that balance? But then also, you know, if our program is cut, and I would say almost obviously the UNC women's soccer team would probably not be cut, but with its success, but to take it on that level of, you know, this is a scary thought to think that my sport could be cut.
Yeah, you know, the revenue part, it gets brought up amongst us, and it's more of a confusion. Like, this is what we've done. How do we not bring in more revenue to the school? And then you have to go back and think about it. For us, well, we are a smaller squad. We get 4 complimentary tickets to give to whoever we want, and then students come for free. So if you really think about it, it makes sense where how we don't have the funds, because we get this huge crowd, but a lot of the people that are there don't have to pay $1 to come to our games. So I think we get away from that, and we get so confused, like, why does our program not have the money? Why are we over budget every year? Why is it coming out of our coaches' pockets to travel our team to the Final Four? But I think you just have to really just remember why you're here, and you can't really dwell too much on it, especially as a non-revenue sport, because I think if we thought too much into it, it would just get away from our love for the game and our love for the university and why we're putting in X amount of hours every day into our sports and academics. I think it's more something our staff and coaches and donors deal with, but from the player point of view, I don't think, it's not that we don't, it's that we kind of can't dwell on the fact that we don't have the funds for things, because we understand what we have and that's what we have to deal with. But to bring up your point of if our sport were to get cut, you know, I think that's just, I mean, it's just a heartbreaking topic for any athlete to imagine. This is your life. We came here, we shaped our lives around this sport, and now we came to college to play. We don't know anything else. We've devoted all of our high school and youth careers to getting where we are today. So for someone sitting in a room on a board to just say, you know what, you're not bringing enough money, we're going to have to cut you, it's like an unfathomable thought almost.
And Sally, I want to bring this to you as well, as being a member of the, again, governing board of UNC. It's not just, as Riley mentioned, the fans in the seats, but it's also talking, and when budget talks come up and things like that, it's talking about TV contracts and, you know, and all that kind of thing. And I'm sure that that's more along the athletic side of the conversation. But, you know, it doesn't just have to do with the local the fan base. It has to do with the national fan base. And, you know, the United States has decided that we love football. We love basketball a little less. We love baseball a little less. Of course, I think baseball's number 2. But, you know, it's been decided. So it's not that, you know, we can change it here in the Chapel Hill Carrboro community.
Well, I guess, Ren, I've got a question, and that is that I don't know that we're planning to cut any sports.
Mm-hmm.
So this conversation to me is kind of, I'm trying to think if I've missed something, because I think that one of the things that we feel very strongly is to try to be able to allow as many students to play sports as possible on the varsity level and then on intramurals levels, you know, as well. And so I want to make sure that as we perhaps talk about this as part of a national conversation, mm-hmm. that it not be misinterpreted that it is becoming part of a local conversation, because sure. To my knowledge, there's no intention of cutting any of the programs at Chapel Hill.
And I think the conversation that, Brian, you're saying is that it's a, you know, it's where everyone else is going, so why wouldn't we be then going there eventually? Is that your question?
Well,
that's
all the more reason where Jay was saying we should be taking a lead here. Why should we be wanting to take, you know, to follow in a trend that is probably not a good trend, where you're letting people, you know, where sports that are not revenue-producing sports but are that are huge in developing character and people, and say, oh, well, we're not going to do that at Carolina anymore because, I mean, if anything, we want to do just the opposite.
Sorry, Jay, and then Brian?
Sure.
Yeah, well, I just want to say that I, too, think it would be a tragedy if we had to cancel any of these sports. But I would also add that if we value these sports as much as we say we do, and I think we do, why can't we search for another revenue model? Why can't we search for other ways to pay for these sports? Why can't we raise student fees, let's say? Why can't we start charging admission for women's soccer games? There are other ways to raise revenue. Why must we have this model resting on what I still, I have to say, I regard as the exploitation of football and basketball players? The football and basketball players are in the sports where, well, as you just said, that are most nationally valued, that have the most marketability, the most earning power, possible earning power, and yet those guys are told that they can't sell a pair of sneakers, they can't accept a hotel room from someone. If they do, they're dirty and they're going to be thrown off the team. That is it's an economic exploitation model that allows for the existence of these non-revenue sport teams, and I think that's terrible. We've got to find another model.
Brian?
With the overall broad scope, Sally, that I was talking about was you look at a program like Maryland, who, again, went from the 28 to the 20 model, and I think what I was just, and again, broad what I was talking about, and also what you look like with an athletic budget, I believe we have a $70 million athletic budget. And when you look at programs that we're shooting for to be like a Texas or a Florida that have $100 million athletic budgets. And, you know, I think it's going to be very hard to reach that kind of figure number when you have 28 athletic sports to provide for. Now, again, I don't know if that's something where we do that right away or if it's something that you know, maybe we don't ever do. Maybe Carolina's okay with having a $70 million budget and we keep the 28 sports because that's what we're going to do at Carolina. And again, this was more just a broad conversation. This has nothing to do with what we're doing locally. This is just something that, you know, when you see on ESPN or you see all these news stories with these new facilities that everyone's building and stadiums and basketball arenas and everything along those lines, where is the money coming from? And it's from budget cuts, fundraising, upping in-state tuition. I know we have one of the best in-state tuition deals for any great public university, you know, which I think is a great deal here. So maybe that's a number we need to look at, maybe increasing in-state tuition, because that's a heck of a bargain, I think. And so that's really what I was talking about.
And I know one of the points was that it has been made is that people want to keep it a bargain. People want to keep it, you know, as much of a deal as they can. Riley, I know you have a point. I just want to make the comment that we are about to wrap things up. I hate that we have to, just as with all of these topics, we could take it into 2 or 3 hours of the panel. But, Riley, go ahead with your thoughts.
I just had one thing to add on. When you're talking about these schools creating these huge new stadiums and facilities, that's another thing that the women's soccer team is trying to do right now is we have these huge plans for this $30 million stadium that's going to be lacrosse and soccer all together. Because you look at our program and you think, oh, they should have this beautiful stadium with these state-of-the-art facilities the way, you know, our football stadium is and the way our baseball stadium is. Yet our title... With our record like ours, you'd think we would. And you go to these schools all over the country. We play there, and they have these amazing, amazing facilities. And not saying ours aren't awesome and we don't love them. But I think another thing that comes with the non-revenue sports is that all of our money for our facilities and for our new stadium that we're trying to build is coming from donations because we don't have the funds from our sport. So I think you have to... You also have to think about it that way, is the fact that because we don't have this money, we depend on donations.
Sure. Laurie and then Sally.
I think Riley's right. We have these tremendous facilities and we want to see them full. 22,000 seats at the Dean Dome, 60,000 seats at Keenan, 5,000 seats at Boschhammer. The more full they are, the greater success we have as a community. But I also just want to make one other point, and I've worked with Chancellor Meeser and Chancellor Thorpe, and I have to say there's been tremendous effort and success in balancing sports offering on campus with the arts. you know, when we look at Emil Kang and what he's done with Memorial Hall and Joe Hodge at Playmakers and the Acklin and the Literary Festival and the Chat Festival, you know, my hat is really off to them, because these cultural arts humanities festivals have attracted new visitors as well. And I see more and more balance, and we're reaping the success of that.
And Sally.
I just wanted to sort of make a comment on what we haven't talked about, and that is what's going on in the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's important that we realize that two lessons from that are that obviously at top levels there needs to be adequate oversight, and I think that there generally is, but there's some areas that were obviously missed. But I also think it's really critical for everyone to realize that good people need to say something when they see something wrong, and it crosses any of this. And I just can't emphasize that enough. I think everyone's intentions are good with athletics and academics, and I think if people see things that are not right, they you know, the idea that they don't feel like they can say something needs to change. And so while we're having this conversation about the role of big money, et cetera, the role of individual responsibility on making sure this stays right filters all the way through the institution. And I just wanted to make a point of saying that.
Excellent point. And this forum is about the community, and we've actually had some listeners call in with some questions. So right now I do want to turn the mic over to Lauren Stafford, who's going to read the first one of those questions and have our panel answer that.
Thanks, Ryan. Actually, it was one person who called. His name's Jay, and he had two questions. So the first question was, do you know the combined profit for the men's football and men's basketball programs? And then the second question was, if a school like Dartmouth, and I'm sorry if I got this kind of wrong, it was a long question. if a school like Dartmouth is able to have 34 varsity sports, why is UNC only have 28, and yet there is even a discussion of cutting more? So.
Very interesting. Brian or Sally, as far as the I don't have the figures in front of me as far as the profit margin, but for, you know, to base like you said, a 6,000, I believe I have that figure right, 6,000 admission levels school versus a 28,000 student school, a school to be able to kind of compare those numbers, you know, what kind of topic or what kind of conversation are we having there that those, you know, a 24 or a 28 versus 34 and the cutting. Sally?
One question on that, which I don't know the answer to, but is really the number of scholarships on those teams.
Sure.
And I think that's probably the more operable question is, and I believe we have more scholarships for the most broad number of teams of a major school, but so I can't answer that specifically, but that would be the question, really, is the number of scholarships as opposed
sure.
to the number of teams.
Very good point. Brian?
A lot of those are Division III sports, so their traveling budget is a lot smaller. They're not traveling large distances. Their facilities probably aren't on the same size scale as ours as well. It's a very hard question not to be able to look and see some of the information. It's a great question. I'd be curious to find out. It's going to be great to see, obviously, with the new chancellor and her background coming from Dartmouth, to see how she hops right into this, obviously coming from Dartmouth to UNC, and obviously all the things we've been through the last 3 years, and how she transitioned in. It's going to be great to see.
And a lot of the conversation around that hire was, you know, a lot of people bringing up, well, she doesn't know how to do athletics. She doesn't know how to handle athletics. When I believe it was Chancellor Thorpe really said that's just not the case. She does know how to handle academic or athletics as well as academics, and she's had quite the tenure there as well. So you know, with that that hiring process with the Board of Trustees going through that, I mean, obviously that went into a major part of looking for the right person in order to oversee the whole university, right, Sally?
It certainly was a factor that was considered, and I think that the other factor is that we feel like we've got a very good athletic administration, and that it should be her job to work with that as opposed to having it be her primary.
Well, I'm sure the conversation's going to continue in the hallways, and it's going to continue throughout the community today after this forum. Thank you so much for joining us, panel. We look forward to talking to you in the future as well, to all of you. This panel, of course, as all of our panels, will be posted on our website, chapelboro.com. Thank you so much for joining us for hour three of the 2013 WCHL Community Forum, and we'll have the next hour coming right up. It's Growth, moderated by Fred Black, right here on WCHL and chapelboro.com. I'm WCHL's news director, Rand Northam. We'll be back after this. Thanks for listening.